Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where you're listening is our business. I'm Brian McKellen. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Now on to the show. Today's guest is Carolyn Cochran. She is a blind Texas-based writer, poet, and author. She's published a book titled East Texas, Garden of Verses. Her written works take readers back in time to the peaceful places and beautiful lands of East Texas. Carolyn also has a poem on her website called The Bugs of My Youth. In addition, Carolyn writes poems to honor her local ACB chapter scholarship winners, and she's written book reviews for newspapers and has been doing this since 1965. Carolyn taught English, directed DeVry University's library in Dallas, and cataloged books for college libraries. Carolyn joins us to talk about her literary life. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I'm happy to be in contact with you again, and I enjoyed meeting you at the National Conference and Convention of the American Council of the Blind in Dallas, Texas.
But before we talk about how you became a writer, we want to learn more about you. Your website, CarolynCochranCreations.com, says that you're visually impaired. How did you become visually impaired?
I developed glaucoma at the age of 25. It was when I just turned around the first of 1960, and I lost vision at my left eye. That's one eye is not considered visual impairment by the Texas Department of Transportation, but the second eye became visually impaired when I developed a cataract, and my doctor did not want to operate until medical science had caught up with it, with the problem, that is. And that lasted from 1979 until 1982. By that time, medical science caught up with the problem, and I had DeVry's insurance that assured me I would be able to live on an income should something happen to my one seeing eye, and I consented to the surgery. It was successful. That carried me from 1994 until about 1995, when I found my vision again was going bad. I learned finally that the problem was the surgeries that had been performed on my eye to stop the glaucoma and to lower the pressure. And these were surgeries that were done in 1994 and 1995, and they did not constitute an impairment at the time. But I learned that I needed to have a cornea transplant, and that this is what happens to any patient who has as many as 30 glaucoma surgeries on one eye. Those are the words from Dr. M.K. Cass at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. And I paid my way to go up there and hear what they had to say. So, the first transplant took 6 months to recover and held up for 6 months and then collapsed. At that point, Fry gave me a medical termination with benefits that carried me until I turned 65 and was able to get Medicare.
But now we got to talk about your creative writing career, because your website, and also this special website called ProBook, says that you got your bachelor's degree in English from Beaver College in Glenside, Pennsylvania, in 1956, your master's in English from the University of Texas at Austin in 1960, and the master's of library science from Texas Women's University 10 years later in 1970. What motivated you to choose this field of study, and what were the challenges, the vision challenges, you had?
My mother valued education. She had both me and my brother out of the house going to school, and she continued doing that until she collapsed with a stroke at the age of 81. And I saw, just as my brother saw, a living example of someone who profited from education. And so I went to school mindful of the fact that I could profit from education as my mother had if I really worked hard at it. And so as a result, I moved from being the bachelor's degree to the master's degree. And when I found I didn't like teaching that much, to the library science degree. And very interestingly, when I started out with DeVry, I was teaching five subjects, one of which was industrial psychology and public speaking and so forth, and operating the library too. So it looked like the whole experience and the whole curriculum paid off, just like her education paid her off.
What were the vision challenges that you faced working as DeVry's library director?
I had to remember to look away from the book or whatever I was looking at about every hour or so to see that I didn't overstrain my eyes. And then secondly, I developed a cataract. I guess it was in 1978, and my doctor didn't want to operate on it until medical science had caught up with the problem. And like I said before, I had to work with a big, thick lens on my right eye, and on the glasses, that is, and help catalog from Dewey Decimal System to the Library of Congress and get books put in the right position with vision that was only 20 over 80. And I did get some things from the local low vision clinic. With the use of these things, I was able to get a good magnifier, a good little telescope to see things at a distance. And we started using computers at that time. The computer programs that were sometimes marked in green, they provided me with the colored paper I could put on the manual so I could see the green commas that were in the black printed book. So they were problems, but I'm thankful that I worked at a place that was patient enough to let me work through my problems and support me all that time.
I'm sure they were very patient to you, Carolyn. Very patient. I got to ask you about your book, East Texas Garden of Verses. You had completed two Richland College, Dallas creative writing courses. They were for senior citizens. The teacher
That's
of that
right.
class, he encouraged you and the rest of the students to write about your childhood. How did that encouragement get
okay.
you to write the book?
Well, that's really an interesting question. Rika Garcia, our teacher at the time, had us keep what she called art journals. We drew a picture, or in my case, I cut a picture out of a book or printed out something from my computer and pasted it in on a page in my art journal and wrote about that. She told us to use sketchbooks, not lined paper, because she said using unlined paper enabled us to turn loose our imagination and get down to our feelings. Well, I think that was something that just worked like magic for me, because I turned loose of a lot of a frustration and crying about my own non-beloved childhood. By the time I got rid of those frustrations and quit crying, I felt sort of like Big Jim did after he spent his confinement in a cabin writing about having someone transcribe in his own blood his experiences of being a slave. This is what Tom Sawyer in Mark Twain's book, Huckleberry Finn, recommended that he have before they disclosed to him that he was a free man thanks to Aunt Polly, who had just died and had given him his freedom in her will. Anyway, I began to see that Tyler was a lovely, good place to grow up, and that we had friends, and we had people who cared for us, and we always felt in touch with people who were looking out for us.
Which company did you publish the novel with, and how'd you close the deal?
Word Right, owned by Jones and Howard Neubauer, came to our school and said that they were looking for manuscripts for a book that the state of Texas was subsidizing for them. It was a book entitled The Noble Generation, and they were looking for manuscripts of people's experiences during from the 30s up through the 60s in Texas. And so I told my husband that we had to go and hear this man and let me submit something when he spoke at the Barnes & Noble across at Lincoln Center across the street from North Park Mall in Dallas. Well, he did agree to give up his ball game for the day and went with me. And while I was there, I showed him a poem that I had done with a swing my artist, Joe Tomlinson, had illustrated. And it had big trees in it, too, the big tree that Joe had painted. And I asked the coward, can you do something like this? He said, sure, we can do that. And the next time he was in town, he told me he wanted copies of my book. Well, I showed up with a manuscript on one set of papers and the illustration on the CD-ROM. I had learned how to integrate the two. And then I gave them both to him. And his wife said that my writing was good. And so I had help from a man who was a graduate from Stephen F. Office Electrical Engineering Department, helped me integrate the pictures and the stories into one, and put it all together in one big, great big manuscript. And then we went to, I'm trying to think of the name of that store, Kinko's. And it sounds something else, I know. And I told him I needed copies of that with my picture in 60 pixels in color on a disc to send to my publisher. And I got my publisher to give me their home address so I could send it to them by FedEx. FedEx wouldn't send anything to a post office box. And so they got it, and they put it out, and they were good enough to find a company, I think it was in Tennessee, who would produce the pictures in color. And I want you to know I felt like I was a really triumphant citizen of the United States having gotten my book published and in color.
Her book and your website both say that you've written poetry and book reviews for several newspapers, one of which was the Dallas Morning News from the early to mid-70s. What were your most memorable poems and reviews that you wrote for this paper?
Okay, well, my most memorable poem was a poem I wrote about my husband the night we went to his hometown of Nashville, Arkansas, and met his mother. And I had that published in the Portsmouth Southwestern American newspaper. And it was a brief, very short poem. It ended, "The finest sky is in your eyes. It has a horizon, an endless lake to sail upon, and hear lapping waves sing horizon." Well, it made him very happy. That's one thing. And then, I don't think I published anything for quite a while after that. I'm trying to think. Richland College published in directory an announcement of schedules for their emeritus program, "My Old Lady Song," because they service senior citizens above 65, and they wanted people to know that people who were blind and who were deaf and who were mobility impaired as well were welcome to come to the school and write.
That's very good. In addition to the work you've done in terms of writing, you've written poems to honor your local ACB scholarship winners. How do you work with the local ACB chapter to do this?
One particular woman who has passed on had this scholarship banquet. Interestingly, she was a Toastmaster at a club that was set up to help out people who had strokes or who had somehow had some kind of impairment that did not permit them to participate in a regular type of Toastmasters group. She asked me to write a poem honoring the graduates. Honoring the scholarship winners. And the first one I did was not effective, just sort of historical preaching, saying how blind people have come from being exploited people to being fully capable citizens. It sounds like it ought to be inspirational, but you can't do it. I don't know how to do it in a 5-minute poem. You take at least a book. But the second year she had me do it, she asked me to do a better job, let's say. And so I took a phrase of Napoleon Hill's, Napoleon, the General Napoleon supposedly had said, "Don't give me generals who are just strong and brave. Give me generals who bring good luck." And then I went on and said that education had brought my mother good luck and also myself good luck. And I told about how mother had her daddy struggle with her elder brother to get money to send her to school. And this was between 1916 and 1920 when women didn't even have a right to vote. Then how I had experienced good luck after getting a master's degree in spite of my glaucoma and moving on. And I ended by telling everyone that Rita Garcia passed around a polished stone to everybody in the class, and we all touched each other's stone and then took it home. And I told them that that was my good luck stone, and I called up each scholarship winner and asked them to come receive a copy of my book that was autographed to them and to rub my good luck stone. And they liked that. And so the scholarship winners got a copy of my book and a copy and one of the stones I had. I had three, and so I had one for each one.
Carolyn, how can our listeners learn more about you? And how can they buy copies of your book, check out your poem?
Okay. My book is available at the Barnes & Noble website and also with Wordwright.biz. That's the name of the publisher of my book. And I am listed in 5 different who's who's, the who's who of the world, who's who of the South and Southwest, who's who in education, and who's who in America. And so that's another place where they can look for me. I'm trying to think if there's any other place besides that.
How about your website, CarolynCochranCreations.com?
CochranCreations.com. The man who designed that has passed on, and I'm glad you asked about that because I need to recruit somebody to update that website and allow me to hear from other people. I am also on Facebook under the name Carolyn Cochran in Dallas, Texas.
That's good. Let me spell that website for some of our listeners. That's CarolynCochranCreations.com.
It is correct.
And you're
how you do it, but I would never pick you for a blind person with the accuracy you have with letters and numbers.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. So you're currently trying to recruit somebody to update your website. How can they contact you if they're interested?
Okay, I would recommend that they contact me by my email. And I do have 2 email addresses. One is CarolynCochran734@gmail.com. And then Google gave me another one. It's CarolynCochran94@gmail.com. So, either one will get me.
One final quick question. What advice do you have for our listeners who want to become librarians or writers or even go into teaching?
Okay. I have thought about that. I think the first thing anybody should do whenever they become an adult, if they want to get into a profession that calls for a lot of sitting and studying, is to write a journal, just like Rica Garcia did with us. And use a picture, write about the picture, use online paper, and just let yourself go. And do it for about 3 pages about every day you can. And then think, if you're visually impaired or can't see at all, then type it on your brailler, if you have one, or somehow record it. I have found that just doing it by voice are doing it on a computer with Microsoft Word just didn't do the trick. Find a way to be creative. Maybe a lot of people who are blind are guitar players. Be creative with your guitar or whatever you've got. This will lead you to what you need to do. That's why I say that. And secondly, I would recommend that they have a support group of some sort. My parents certainly supported me in getting my education and keeping me on track and keeping me from doing it. They would not let me sit down and frown, let's say. They had me get up and work and do what I could. And thirdly, I would say just listen to your gut.
That's right. And Carolyn, this information is going to inspire our visually impaired listeners to consider the challenging fields of librarian, teaching, and authorship. This information is going to also encourage our listeners to check out your book, poem, and website. Thanks for joining us today.
And thank you for having me, Brian.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Join me, Brian McKellen, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.